I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies in West London, presumably blue skies in Villarreal as well, where Unai Emery has won his fourth Europa League. We're going to get into that, of course. But we got a ton of other stuff. We're going to look at the Champions League final with Stuart Robson. No more Zizou at Real Madrid. It is official now. No more Conte at Inter. Probably no more Donnarumma in Milan.
No more Pirlo in Juventus.
No more
Galtier in Lille. I mean, so many managers changing.
It is incredible what's going on right now. This is turning into the busiest week of the season. but let's start with the Europa League. Villarreal coming out, winning this on penalties. I want to start with the penalty shootout because, as a neutral, that was just incredibly dramatic. This is why people who don't like football, don't know anything about it, they watch it, they see the drama, and everybody, all 11 players on both teams, got to take a penalty kick. Every single one of them made them, except for David De Gea.
Yeah. I think it's the joint record of amount of penalties scored in a European game. The other one is in like a third round playoff game or qualifier game.
21 out of 22.
It's incredible. And you have to feel for De Gea, although I don't know why he tries some fancy penalty instead of just smashing it like Rulli did.
Rulli, who, by the way, said he'd never taken a penalty before.
Yeah,
he just said, like, oh, look, I'm a big, strong guy. Let me just hit it as hard as I can.
But surely
that's the worst that can happen.
That's the way. Why is De Gea trying to do something fancy? Like, let's wait and see maybe where the keeper is going. No, you're not Neymar. Just smash it.
You're not even Ederson. You're not known for your feet, by the way.
And
you're the least Spanish goalkeeper in the world in that sense.
Yeah, and De Gea is not a good goalkeeper for penalties. This is 40 in a row now he hasn't saved. 4-0 gap, 36 for United and 4 for Spain. How can you not save a single penalty in 40 attempts?
I suspect we will have more criticism of De Gea and maybe Tom Heaton on his way to Manchester United as well. Wonder what's going to happen that way. We'll get to that in the Gab and Jules podcast. I want to take it back to Villarreal because, look, Unai Emery, we were talking before off air. You weren't that impressed with the way Villarreal played.
No.
I look at it, they're missing, I think, a really important player for them in a game like this in the form of Chukwueze.
Yeah.
They made a big call with Alcacer out. Baca starting. He changed the formation several times, made a bunch of changes at different times. While the guy on the other bench, I think his first substitution was in the 10th minute of extra time.
100th minute.
I mean, if we have to talk about who outcoached who in this one, you got to give it to Emery, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Emery won the manager's battle. But then, I'm sorry, this is a Villarreal team who should play better than this, who can't just defend for the whole game like they did pretty much. I mean, they had one shot on target, it's the goal. They had a couple of other decent opportunities, but De Gea didn't have a save to make either. Not that Rulli had much more to do, and I think United were disappointed.
United tried.
Solskjaer drove me mad in that game for not making any subs. It's not just the sub. Okay, keep the same 11 if you want. But change something. Put Rashford up front with Cavani. Put Bruno in a 10. Or do something different. But just don't stay the same way. When even in the second half after they scored, there was a bit more energy, a bit more urgency in their passing because the first half was so slow and so sideways. You know, but come on.
Well, when I saw that lineup, right, and then later we found out, it's because Fred wasn't fully fit. Otherwise, Fred would. And I saw Pogba on the pitch alongside McTominay. I thought, like, oh, great. It's going to be an open attacking game. United are going to go for it. United tried to go for it. And then I was reminded myself of what we've been saying all year.
Yep.
That when United play a team that are well organized and sit back, they can't create chances because they don't create chances through patterns of play. They have two creative players in the whole team, one being Bruno, who I did not think had a great game.
No,
the other one being Pogba, who got substituted, which I think says it all. And it's like a man trying to hit his head against a brick wall. It's not through lack of trying. Solskjaer tried to be positive. But this team...
Sure. How did he try to be positive?
Well, at least he had the attacking players out there. But they don't have the patterns of play. They don't have... Even I looked at some point. I'm like, okay, so Greenwood and Rashford create some mismatches, create some one-on-ones. Nothing was working because a well-organized defense that sits deep... will shut you down.
And they were 2v1 often, and Rashford, I thought, had a really poor game. I still think that in a game like this, Mason Greenwood is your perfect impact sub. It's just perfect to bring on after an hour when everybody's tired. I don't care who you start. Play Fred for an hour if you want with McTominay, Pogba on the left, Rashford on the right, Bruno and Cavani, and then bring on Greenwood.
I
just thought Solskjaer got a lot of things wrong.
when you do something different, when you do something that defies conventional wisdom and you win, ooh, you're clever. When you do something that defies conventional wisdom and you lose on penalties, or even just you go to penalties.
What do you mean defies conventional wisdom? What was the wisdom in the team that he picked?
No. Defies conventional wisdom, mean go against conventional wisdom. For the life of me, I could not understand. And I'm not one of those people who says like, oh, look, he's not making substitutions, he's an idiot. But you're not getting things done.
Yeah.
You're doing the same thing over and over and over again for 90 minutes. The other guy keeps making substitutions to keep you on edge, to change things.
Completely.
You've got players on the bench. Were you surprised by that?
Completely.
First substitution, 10th minute of injury time. Of extra time.
Surprise is the wrong word because then we go back to the limit of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a manager and the fact that he's still learning. But it's a lot of games now.
He can't still be learning. He's been doing this for 10 years now.
Exactly, but still. So surprise is the wrong word. I was disappointed more than surprised because I knew that he could do something like this in a final of such a big game where either he gets cold feet and think, oh, I can't change because imagine I change and then they score because that sort of messes up the team. But there's no explanation on why he was watching the game, the same game as us, and thought, yeah, we're doing so well. I don't need to change anything here. And again, I'm not saying keep the same players if you want to because you don't trust Daniel James or you don't trust Fred or whatever. But even if you keep the same 11, change something. Right. For the life of me, please do. Because that will mess up Raul Albiol and Pau. Suddenly they see Rashford and Cavani.
Change the setup.
Or Greenwood and Cavani. They go, oh, okay, now we'll have to defend differently. Or they see Wan-Bissaka far higher up the pitch. Or they go to a back three. I don't know, anything. Please do something.
Yeah. I mean, look, and I think it's not just about the substitutions. It's about kind of changing and adjusting in general.
Completely.
Everybody made the joke, oh, ha, ha, if Solskjaer could bring Solskjaer on, ah, super sub, ha, ha. Okay, and there's nobody like that on the bench, fine. There's no Martial. Fred's not really going to move the needle for you, although obviously he did come on later, and, you know, with all due respect to James and Mata, whatever. I get that, but you're right. Give them a different look. Give them something different to think about
exactly.
At this stage of the game, because you do have players who are versatile.
Really?
I look to me like Rashford. Oh, sorry, before I get to that, though, the one thing which struck me, too, is, and I hope this is not the case, is when I looked at the players who could be substituted, and then you think, well, Cavani, Rashford, Bruno, Pogba, they're all status players. In the end, I think the first guy to come off was Greenwood, who happens to be the youngest guy that you can kick.
Yeah.
I would have left Greenwood on because I also thought Greenwood wasn't having a bad game, unlike Rashford. Mm. But is there a bit of that too? A bit of this idea that these are my better players, I need to leave them out there?
I don't know, maybe. I would think that at that kind of level, you can't just base your decisions on, okay, who's the leaders? Regardless of who he is, if he's having a bad game or not influencing the game the way you want, then you sub him. You shouldn't stay on the pitch because of your status or because you're Paul Pogba or Bruno Fernandes or Edinson Cavani. Even if they can change the game like this on a moment of magic, but if they've got no influence on the game, in a way, why keeping them? I don't know what kind of relationship he has with those kind of players and if he was, I don't know, scared to take them off or fear that by taking them off, you take away this possibility that they would make something happen out of nothing, which they can do. So I understand that as well, why you leave them on, because you think, yeah, but it's Pogba, it's Bruno, it's Cavani. They can do something very special, which is true, except that on Wednesday night, it just didn't happen. Yeah. They didn't do anything special or magic.
Was it weird? I mean, I was watching on television. And by the way, it was an absolute dog's breakfast in terms of trying to understand who was coming on, who was coming off. I don't know whose fault it was. In the extra time, it was actually difficult. I mean, I think you were in a pub watching the United fans.
In Manchester, yeah.
But, you know, you see the guy saying, oh, look, Mata's coming on. And then, like, 10 minutes later, he's still sitting there. And, like, it looks like Pogba goes to the side of the pitch during a substitute. I think because McTominay was down.
Yeah.
And he has a drink. And then you find out, no, Pogba's actually taken off. So Production
wasn't great, yeah.
Yeah, that was a shambles. But was it weird that Pogba came off? You've got the penalties coming on, right? So you figure I'm going to send on the specialists for the penalties. Although,
Pogba's taken a lot of them before as well. He's missed some.
Was he injured?
I didn't think so. Maybe he felt he gave a lot of energy, that he was maybe low on energy, and you don't take any risk for that. I understand the sort of Mata and Alex Tellier substitution, and they were the first one to take the pens.
But Dan James, not so much.
Not so much, but they did well. But then penalties, I know penalties is the lottery, everybody says, okay, maybe it is. I still think De Gea should have done much better. I don't think either Rulli or De Gea are very good penalty goalkeepers anyway.
No.
But it's a shame to still lose, and that's what Solskjaer put forward. You know, he said, well, we lost on one kick, which is true in the end, but it should have been so much better for United.
But the other point is that if you'd won, you would have won on one kick. And the reality is, you know, your wage bill is like five times that of Villarreal. You've had time to prepare for this game. Both these teams, this is the other thing I thought was disappointing, both these teams, especially United, fielding shadow sides in their last...
Yeah, but not Villarreal against Real Madrid in that game.
Well, less so.
A lot of that team still played last night.
Arguably, I think Villarreal had heavier absences. Well, it's probably about the same. Chukwueze versus Maguire. Yeah. I know Martial's up, but Martial's been out forever. Yeah, Martial wouldn't have started probably in this game.
No,
either.
I don't think so
come
either.
Off the bench.
But for me, it's still more United who lost that final than Villarreal who won it.
Okay,
I know you disagree a bit, but...
I do. I want to give a little bit of love.
No, but they
I
got
to give
credit.
It love. Can we give love to my man, Gerard Moreno?
Of course.
Because I thought... Gerard Moreno is one of those strikers who I think is... Because of the way he looks and the way he moves, he's a little bit clunky. It's a little bit of the Thomas Muller about
him.
And then you look at his intelligence, you look at his production. It's not just this year. This year, I think he's up to 31 goals.
Yeah.
Last year, I think he had 18 in the league alone for Villarreal. So he is a legitimate goal scorer, despite not necessarily playing center forward, because whether it's Bacca or Alcacer, he's always played with other people. He does a ton of work off the ball.
Very intelligent as well.
He's got a little bit... I mean, not as good, but he's got a little bit of the off-brand Harry Kane about him as well, I think, in the work he does off the ball, in the work he does setting up teammates. And I'm just wondering if maybe we're underrating Spain a little bit. We'll go look at their strikers, and they're like, oh, look, they don't have a striker. I mean, they got Moreno, got Morata, they've got, you know.
This is a different step up for someone like him, you know, at the Euros. We'll see. It's going to be interesting because he's a very interesting player, you're right. Yeah. And that goal he scored, the run he made... The way he stayed on side, the finish. There's a lot of good things that he did.
And
even the celebration was brilliant as well. But for someone who got the vaccine. But yeah, so... Yeah, and they deserve love. Unai Emery deserves some love, of course, Gab. And I'm happy for Coquelin, for Etienne Capoue, who didn't have the greatest of time maybe at some point in England. And there's a lot of great stories. Pau Torres is a wonderful defender who's going to be one of the best in the world. There's no doubt. Raul Albiol, what a great story for such a veteran like him. So there's a lot of good stories.
I'm going to give out this
but
these last
United two lost that game more than Villarreal.
We had to the Champions League final because it's a slightly bigger game. But before that, I got to dispense a little nuggets of love to Pau Torres and Raul Albiol, because
of course.
Not so much for the performance, but for the story. Albiol is a guy I've always really liked, because if he had a different body, he'd be playing central midfield, right?
Yeah.
He's so smart. He's so good on the ball. And yet he's a big, strong dude. Now he's got the beard. He's cool. He's a phenomenal leader for Napoli and the hair and whatever. The great story about Pau Torres is, first of all, he's from Villarreal. And nobody is from Villarreal because it's a spec, basically. But I love the fact that, was it 15 years ago? It's been that long. Champions League semifinal, Arsenal against Villarreal.
06,
yeah, 15 years ago. Yep. He was behind that goal when Riquelme misses the penalty, right? He's behind that goal. You know, I love that. I love the continuity of people, hometown clubs,
of course,
and whatever.
It's great.
So,
and this could be his last season as well, because I think he will go to bigger things and bigger clubs. So well done to him.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab. Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, enough Europa League. Let's go to the real deal. Because Saturday night, Chelsea against Manchester City, we are joined by the tactical guru, Stuart Robson. Robbo, welcome aboard. Just to get the injuries out of the way, as far as we know, we're recording this Thursday morning. Jules, correct me if I'm wrong. Manchester City are pretty much at full strength. They have all the options. Chelsea still maybe a little, some lingering doubts about Havertz and his muscular injury. Obviously, he came on and played at the weekend, so we know he can play. But whether he's ready to start, I don't know. Other than that, Mendy's recovered. Conte's recovered. Yep. Christensen's fine.
All good.
Everything's good.
Yeah.
All right, so the key question is, I'm going to start with City. We've seen him play in many big games. We've seen him play that lineup without Gabriel Jesus and without Aguero, with Bernardo Silva and De Bruyne kind of alternating up front, whatever you want to call it, sometimes Foden. Is that what we're going to be served up in the final, Robbo? Is that what you think?
I think so, because when he played with Jesus against Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final, it didn't work because the three centre-halves of Chelsea just made it difficult for Jesus to run in behind them. And Jesus kept on coming short for the ball. They didn't switch the play out wide enough. They didn't control the midfield as they have done in most games. So I think he's going to go with two midfield players that, as you said, rotating between centre-forward and going back into midfield. And they'll dominate that midfield area and they'll play with two wide players. And that's how I think they're going to play.
I'm kind of picturing here, I'm kind of imagining, and I'm just dealing with kind of that sort of front four, if you want to call it that. We know De Bruyne is going to play. I think that's 100%. Mm-hmm. I think Mahrez is very likely to start.
Yeah, I agree.
And Foden also very likely. For the other spot in that group, given the versatility of these players, it basically comes down to who, Jules?
Bernardo Silva.
Or Sterling.
Sterling. Yeah, exactly. Unless you play both Fernandinho and Rodri, and then Gundogan can have a different role alongside De Bruyne, Foden and Mahrez. But
you wouldn't expect that. There's not really a need to do that given the way Chelsea set up.
Definitely not. So I think Bernardo, for what he's shown in that kind of setup in those big games, deserves to start. And I don't think Raheem Sterling, in Pep's mind right now, is a player for those big games. But it could be one of the choices.
Robbo, on the Chelsea end, we're going to assume 3-4-2-1 because that's what he's always played since getting there. We're going to assume that Mason Mount starts because he always starts.
Yeah.
The big question is, who are the other two? Because we've seen a ton of Timo Werner, not all of it good of late.
Yeah.
What do you think we'll see? He's got so many options: Ziyech, Pulisic, Giroud, theoretically. I'm not going to say Tammy Abraham.
Havertz, maybe?
Kai Havertz, if fit. What's he going to do and what would you do, Robbo?
Well, again, I go back to the FA Cup semi-final and everybody talks about them playing with one up front and two in behind. They actually played with two up front. Ziyech played with Timo Werner up front and it worked really well because then Mount went back into a midfield position so they could match Manchester City in midfield. And Ziyech would go out to the right-hand side when they were defending, but he'd go and play up front with Timo Werner. And I think it worked so well in that FA Cup semi-final. I think he'd try and do the same again. Whether it's with Havertz, I think Werner will play up front because he's the one player that's going to run in behind. And then he'll play with either Ziyech or Havertz, with Mount playing in that little bit deeper role in midfield. But I would go, at the moment, I'd go with Ziyech. I think it worked really well in the FA Cup semi-final. I think he should go with that again.
And Werner's runs in the league game at the Etihad that they won 2-1, his runs, I know he's far from perfect, but his runs really hurt them in the way he ran in behind. If he can stay on side, I think this is something that they hate doing when they've got that kind of striker against them or forward against them.
But are you guys saying this because you guys don't think Havertz is fully fit or there's question marks, you don't want to play him and then take him off? And because I mean for me, if you're really such a big fan of Werner's runs, and I have some issues, I wonder if Pulisic can't do some of what Werner does. And I think Havertz I've really come around on Havertz of late, before his latest injury. You think that is a better option than Havertz, Werner?
I mean, the second game against Real Madrid at the Bridge, the front three was Mount, Havertz and Werner, with Havertz and Werner being quite fluid on
exactly
who goes forward and he worked really well on the Werner goal, for example. They're both involved in that move, so it can work like that as well.
All right, neither of you guys has brought up Pulisic, but obviously we all agree he's in the mix. I want to ask Robbo, from a coaching perspective, when you have so many options, when you don't have a hierarchy, and they really don't,
yeah,
because we've also seen Werner on the bench at times, does that in some way complicate things for other players on the team? Because if you were to play a big striker, or if you were to play Havertz, inevitably he's going to move differently from the way Werner does. Pulisic perhaps more direct than Hakim Ziyech. Ziyech maybe more creative. Can you talk a little bit about the dynamic and the adjustments that need to be made in other areas of the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing with Timo Werner up front, then you know that you're not going to play into his feet very often. You want him to run in behind, and he's going to try and stretch Manchester City, and then it means the other players can then come shorter to get the ball. I thought they did it brilliantly against Real Madrid in the very first game, the game in Madrid, where Timo Werner kept on making runs in behind, and Pulisic came short, and Mount came short, and they caused Real Madrid all sorts of problems. The centre-halves weren't quite sure whether to come out or whether to stay in, and that's going to be the same problem for Chelsea centre-backs. You know, for Man City centre-backs, do they go in with Pulisic, or if he plays in that role, do they go in with Mason Mount, or do they stay back? And that's the problem they had in the FA Cup semi-final. They weren't quite sure which one to do. And when they did go in, Timo Werner kept on running in behind them. So it all depends who plays up front, who's the main striker, what the other players have to do.
Conte is fit. I just want to get the two in central midfield out of the way. Do we think Conte, Jorginho, or Conte, yeah, Kovacic?
No, Conte, Jorginho. Jorginho is too important to build from the back to be able to play.
But I thought Jorginho was the source of all of Chelsea's evils, and every time they lose, it's his fault because he missed a penalty yonks ago, right?
He gave that poor bad pass against Arsenal. But I think Jorginho is so important in the way, especially with the ball. Without the ball, he could improve certainly on
that's
on
why
the
you have three centre backs.
Yeah, but with the ball, you have to play him, and I think Kante is good. But I think Kovacic, like Pulisic, are huge impact players. I think this is going to be a very tactical final, and tactical often means defensive, and this might be defensive, not very sexy, not very open. And I think that if you get to 0-0 with 25 minutes to go, and if you can bring on Kovacic and Pulisic, I think this could be game changers completely. And City have also game changers that they can bring on, of course. But for me, Kovacic and Pulisic could make perfect impact subs if the score is still in the middle, or even if you were goal behind.
Robbo, you're on board with that? You think he's going to go Conte, Jorginho?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a big job for Jorginho and Conte, because if Man City do play with sort of two holding midfield players, one of them could be Gundogan, but you know, one holding midfield player and another one that likes to get forward, and then the likes of Silva and De Bruyne are playing as full centre-forwards, it's going to be difficult for both the midfield players, Conte and Jorginho. Do they drop back with Silva and play that little bit deeper, or do they push on and the centre-halves come out? So there's a massive organisational thing that Tuchel has to do. The understanding between the centre-backs and the two holding midfield players has to be perfect. When to push on, when to drop off. That's going to be key to the way Chelsea play, I think.
All right, we're going to get to what happens at the back. I'm assuming left wing back. He's also, I think, in very, very good form as well. There's no question. Sorry, Marcos Alonso. It's going to be Chilwell, yep, on the left. On the right, there's a bit of an interesting dynamic, I think, because much to Jules' chagrin, we've seen Reece James at centre back and Azpilicueta at right back or right wing back in recent games. I'm going to suggest he's not going to do that in this game because you don't have the ball over the top super speedy threat. So you can play Christensen or somebody else in the back three and put Reece James at right back. So then my question is, well, is it Reece James at right back? Is it Azpilicueta to give you more defensive cover, Robbo?
You're absolutely right. The only reason I thought he played Reece James in the game against Leicester was to stop the runs of Vardy. But then he played him in the next game and played Azpilicueta as the right wing back. Azpilicueta isn't so good going forward. We know that as Reece James, because Reece James has got more energy. Azpilicueta is a better defender. I actually think he's going to go with exactly the same. I think he's now quite happy with James playing as the right-sided centre-half, and I think he's quite happy with Azpilicueta playing as the right wing-back, because he's going to have to do a lot of defending, whether it be against Foden, whether it be against the full-back getting forward at times, Azpilicueta has done a good job playing in that position, not so much going forward, but defensively, and I think he's going to stick with it again.
See, that's a good point, Jules, because if you have Reece James in the back three, you have another center back who can step into the midfield and be comfortable passing. So if you want to do that, if you want to build from the back, that is the attractive option that Reece James get you. It's about, I suspect you don't like that.
I mean,
you want a real centre back.
I know they're different competitions and it was a different time in the season, but the two games that they won against City in the FA Cup and in the league, he plays as Azpilicueta as the third centre back and Reece James as the right wing back. And I cannot see why he would change that. You think that Reece James did well in that position? I think that he still has so much to learn, and I'm not sure he's ready for a Champions League final in that position against the City team that, like Robo was saying, if they play with the false number nine, it's so natural in a way, uncharacteristic, like that you have to be really good at knowing exactly what to do. And I'm not sure Reece James is ready for that. He might be, and he might play great in the final if he plays in that position, but I would keep it exactly the way they did in those two games against City, Azpilicueta with Thiago Silva and Rudiger, and then Reece James on that sort of right wing back position.
Yeah, that does kind of change the dynamic, doesn't it?
What I would say is that having watched Chelsea recently and being at Wembley when they have played in the games, Thiago Silva is almost pushing Reece James and he's pushing Rudiger in to go and pick up people and get tight. And Thiago Silva almost playing as a sweeper at the moment. You know, that's the way. When you watch it on TV, you can't always see it. When you're at the games, you can see that he's pushing the other two in and he's dropping off. And he did it brilliantly on occasions in both games, just playing as a sweeper. And that's what I think he'll do again. He pushes Rudiger to try and mark in front of the centre forward or go and push in against De Bruyne, it could be, and he would just drop off and fill the spaces. So that's going to be a key issue again.
How cool would that be if Tuchel throws us that curveball and goes man-to-man, Rudiger on De Bruyne and Reece James or Christensen or whoever on Bernardo Silva?
In that game at the Etihad, that's what Rudiger pretty much did. And it was good. Oh, and Marcos Alonso, yeah, it was good. But the key as well would be how City's press will be effective or not against, again, the build-up play from Chelsea, because in the FA Cup semi-final, they went man-marking. Everybody had a man to go and do that press, and the one moment where someone is late on Mount, then they have the counter-attack, and then it's the goal, Werner for Ziyech, and that's it. So that man-to-mark press is great, but he has to be perfect every time, because the one time he's not perfect, and someone like Mount or Jorginho has half a second of freedom, it's too late then. So it'd be very interesting to see.
So we've been through pretty much Chelsea's lineup. Obviously, I think we don't need to talk about Mendy's going to be in goal, and we agree Rudiger and Thiago Silva will play regardless. We've covered whether it's Christensen or Reece James or Azpilicueta as a third centre half and the knock-on effect of the wing-back. Let's talk City, and please stop me because I think some positions are pretty obvious. We know Ederson's going to be in goal. Yeah. We know Kyle Walker's going to be your right-back. Let me take a step back first, because we've seen Pep in huge games go and do something weird that he hasn't done before. We've seen this many times in the past, but we don't expect to see it here. Am I right? Am I reading you guys correctly?
I think so. No? I think he's learned a lot from the mistakes against Lyon last season and being scared of Toko Ekambi and all that kind of stuff.
So this is not the game, Robbo, to go and try to shock and surprise Tuchel with something weird, right?
No. No, the only thing that he will do, and he's done it in games, and he starts with a back four, but really it ends up being a back three. I think Walker will tuck in, and I actually think Cancelo will play at left back, and he will almost play as a left wing back at times when they've got possession. And whoever plays on the wide side, whether it be Sterling or Foden, will come in field to go and join the whatever the false number nine will be. So I think that's the only surprise that you'll see when the game starts, is that Walker will tuck in and be a right-sided centre-half at times. And the left back, whether it be Zinchenko, whether it be Mendy, whether it be, well, I think it'd be Cancelo, will play much higher up the field when they get possession. And the wide player will then tuck in and get closer to the front player.
Yeah, it was going to be my question, right? So we know, obviously, the back four, Stones and Ruben Dias. Left back was the only question position. Robbo's going with Jean Cancelo. I think as much as we love Mendy, I don't think he's starting.
No.
Zinchenko may have a shot.
I think he has a bigger shot than Cancelo. Definitely. And it would be harsh on him. He's been so good against PSG, for example, in that second leg. I think he probably offers more security slightly defensively than Cancelo. I know Cancelo has been so good in that sort of hybrid position, but I think I could see Zinchenko starting ahead of Cancelo.
Now, I would have taken as read for much of the season that Rodri was going to be an automatic choice in a big game. I'm not so sure because obviously we've seen him drop for Fernandinho before. Do you think that, I mean, there's always the option of going Rodri and Fernandinho and pushing on Gundogan, but does anybody think there's a position of Rodri being left out? Would you leave him out in a game like this?
I don't think so. I know, of course, against PSG, that second leg, but you had the lead team to defend. Yeah. It was Fernandinho's birthday, which was one of the justifications why Pep started him in that game, saying, hey, he's 36 today. This is his birthday present. I just think Rodri has been so important, so good, that he will start that game. And I don't think he will start with Fernandinho. I think he will be on his own in front of that back four, back three, and then having Gundogan next to him. And then, as we say, the front four ahead.
Rodri, Gundogan makes sense to you, Robbo?
Absolutely. That's what I was saying earlier. Yeah, I think Gundogan will be alongside Rodri, but he'll play further forward. He'll be able to make forward runs and he'll swap positions with De Bruyne at times. And I think Mahrez will be on the right-hand side because he's been such a key player for them. He gives them that width. They didn't do it in the semi-final because they had Ferran Torres out there and he didn't go past his man. He couldn't make anything happen. Mahrez is going to be a key player, but Gundogan next to Rodri, I think that's certain for me.
All right, so then we're assuming Mahrez, Foden, De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva is your front four, right? Does anybody want to make a case for anybody else?
Not really.
Nope.
Sterling's not playing well enough at the moment.
No.
All right. So help me just to wrap this. Help me try to kind of imagine how this unfolds, because we've seen, we talked a little bit how you defend against that, because obviously if they keep going back, then, you know, and they're not acting as genuine strikers, especially the two central guys. There's a lot of fluidity. You have to be aware of that. One way to deal with it is to effectively go man for man and Thiago Silva sweeping in certain areas.
Yep.
They've dealt with it fairly comfortably, I think, before when they've done that. Off the ball, if you're City, when you're not in possession, Robbo, how is that front four going to work? Are they going to come and press them high? Are they going to press them perhaps a little bit more in midfield so they've got more space to run into with the likes of Foden and Mahrez?
I think you're absolutely right. I don't think with that formation they can press too high up the field, or certainly from the goalkeeper's kick. They'll wait for the centre-halves to have the ball and then they'll do what good teams do. They'll force it into an area and that's when they'll try and win the ball back. They might force it into wide areas and lock Chelsea down one side of the field, win it back and then counter-attack from there. But I don't think they're going to press really high up the field right from the start of the game. They'll try and win the ball back sort of midway through Chelsea's half, I would think.
The one thing I'm just wondering about this, and I'm on board with what you guys are saying, and this is the only thing that leaves me with a little bit of doubt that Pep might do something different. That front four, incredibly skillful. Apart from Foden, I might argue that they're not super dynamic or athletic relative to the people who are on the bench, i.e. Sterling and Gabriel Jesus. You know,
in terms of pace and running?
In terms of pace, in terms of quickness, change of direction. I mean, De Bruyne is obviously phenomenal, but you know, he's pushing 30 now and whatever. And none of these people are people you would look at him and say, whoa, he's a terrifying athlete. Not Mahrez, not Bernardo Silva, certainly. Foden maybe is the only one. And given that you're up against players who are a little bit older in Rudiger and Thiago Silva, might that be a temptation? Might that be enough to swing it? Or is that maybe a decision you make while the game is going on? Maybe that's when I turn to a Sterling, a Jesus, a Ferran Torres.
Yeah, it's a good point. Although I think by not playing either Foden, Mahrez or Bernardo, because De Bruyne will start 100%, I think you also lose in your pressing. I don't think Gabriel Jesus or Raheem Sterling can press as well as Bernardo, who is so intelligent and has that. He understands it very, very easily. So it depends. If you want to go a bit cautious and try to use that space in behind that back three at Chelsea, then yeah, you can play Gabriel Jesus and he will certainly cause you problems. We saw it again at the Etihad in that game at the Etihad where he forced Christensen to that mistake on the first goal just before the break and then got the penalty that Aguero missed with Panenka. And certainly those runs just hurt Chelsea too. So it's another possibility. I just think that
you start a game like this and you want to keep the ball as much as you can, and for that you play your front four that you've played against PSG in that first leg, for example, where your press was not enough aggressive, but certainly when you had the ball, you make good use of it.
Robbo, final point to you. Chelsea are coming off a really difficult patch in terms of results. Was it three defeats in their last four?
Yeah.
Do we expect a knock-on effect from that, or do you just kind of move on and say, all right, this is completely different. We've had some good players and we've played well, some games we played badly. But, I mean, are players able to kind of insulate themselves from that, especially since they did hit their objective of finishing in the top four?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think the thing they'd be looking at is they'll go back to, as I'm doing, going back to that semi-final game where they, not so much the league game, the semi-final game is where they dominated possession. They got their tactics much better than Man City did on the day. And Man City, even though they had Jesus and even though they had Sterling who could run in behind, they never did. So they didn't cause Chelsea any problems in behind. And Chelsea controlled the game, particularly for the first 60 minutes, I would say. So they've got that confidence in their mind that they can outplay Man City on certain occasions. And I think they're going into the game with a bit of confidence. Tuchel will go into confidence. They got the better of Guardiola in that semi-final. And that's how I think they'll approach the game.
Jules, you get the final word.
Yeah, there's one thing I wanted to say about Pep is, because we're wondering, is he going to try again, like a Pep magic that sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. But I have found him this season, and I did a lot of City games for French television. I interviewed him a lot, post-match, pre-match, all of that. He's far more chilled, I think, than he's ever been. And when we went to the media day, the City media day on Monday, he was so relaxed and so chilled, and he was like saying hello to everyone, fist pumping, how are you? You okay? Commenting on my trainers. It was like, and at some point we said to him, you look more chilled. And he said, he agreed to it. And he said, I'm older now. And he said something very interesting, I thought. He said, I've learned from last season that I have to enjoy this far more than I used to before. You remember how obsessed he was? I mean, In the book by Martin Perano, he says that there's only 30 minutes in the day where he doesn't think about football. And I think that ate him inside. And I think really this season is a different Pep, in the sense that, of course, the football is still the most important, and the pitch, whether it's training or the games, is big, and he's still obsessed and he's OCD and all of that. But I think he's taken a step back massively when he's not on the pitch, when he's not thinking about the games, of like, okay, let's just enjoy this. And I think the comment he made about the final, saying, I'm so confident in myself, in my own team, I don't care who the referee is, almost who we play against, that kind of stuff. This is a very different approach than the Pep so obsessed and tense that we've seen before, right?
Yeah, completely, completely. It's this new zen,
yeah,
Guardiola,
completely.
I think, in some ways. And it's always hard to get the right amount of tension and what you transmit to your players and whatnot. But certainly for me, I don't think City are just favourites. I think they're substantial favourites, in part because of this, because they don't necessarily feel the weight of the game the way Chelsea might.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, enough of that. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Managers on the move. Ooh. As we speculated in the last show, Zinedine Zidane and Real Madrid have parted ways. Jules, what's your sense of what prompted him to go and what comes next?
Well, I think we explained it quite well in the last show, in the sense that I think he got tired. It was a long season, never really felt the love, and maybe wrongly.
Is this millennial Zizou now?
As I don't know if it is, but certainly I think he felt it's a long season, hard season. He took this team as far as he could, semi-final of the Champions League, all the way up to the last game of the season to win La Liga still. And maybe he didn't want to be there for the rebuilding process and saying to some of those players he's been so close to, hey, you have to go now, you have to move on.
What comes next? There's people already linking our man, Mighty Max Allegri, with him.
Yeah.
And Zidane to Juve.
Yeah,
how about
Zidane
that?
To Juve, yeah, we'll see.
He's not going to go straight back in, is he?
I don't know.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah, me too. I'd be surprised. Gab, another one is gone. It's Antonio Conte, who parting ways with Inter by mutual consent just a few weeks after winning the Serie A title. Is this really all about money? He's going to get like a, what, 7 million euro?
It's about money and it's about power. And basically, Inter, as I've told you many times, they're in a very difficult financial situation. They said, look, we need to make a net transfer profit of 80 to 100 million this summer, which, you know, far from being adding stars to the team, means we need to sell at least one of the stars that we have. We need to cut the wage bill 15% to 20% as well, which means none of those like free agents that aren't free and persuading people to go. And Conte looked at it and said, like, nah, I don't really want to be a part of that. I want to go forward. I want to win the Champions League. But of course, look, I got no problem with somebody saying that. How about you man up and realize it's a difficult time for anybody? Because, of course, does he just resign? No. He resigns and says, oh, but I had another year left on my contract. You were going to pay me $25, $26 million because I'm the highest paid manager in Serie A. I'm one of the highest paid in the world. Why don't you pay me half that and I'll go away and I'll promise not to sign on for another Serie A club. Which, by the way, he wasn't going to do anyway because none of these other clubs have money and he likes working with people with money. Yeah. And I don't want to be moralistic about it. But you can't be Mr. Fighter, Mr. Perfection all the time and blah, blah, blah. And he's a phenomenal manager. Don't take it away.
Yeah, of course.
But this is letting your club down, right?
Yeah, I agree.
You had a contract. Things got tough. You won. And now you go on.
Yeah,
and
I think it's disappointing. I have to say.
I think he's making a miscalculation because clubs, I think, for the first time in a long time, are drawing the line and they're becoming much smarter about what a coach actually brings and what they've achieved and in what circumstances.
That's true.
Joan Laporta and Ronald Koeman met to discuss his future and they'll meet again soon. Catalan media suggesting it could cost Barcelona a bundle to get rid of him, having already paid 5 million euros apparently
to get him. Yeah, of course, because he was still under contract with the Dutch FA. I find this fascinating because
Is it too expensive to sack?
I mean, they met Koeman and his agent or lawyer, plus Laporta and all his like two closest sort of ally or whatever. Do you really meet with all those people when you just extend a contract? Because some try to spin it that way. I think you meet with all those people when they want to get rid of you. And I think this is what the negotiation is about. I really believe that Ronald Koeman won't be there next season. They would find some sort of agreement to pay him off something. But yeah, this is not the kind of meetings that you have to extend your contract or even to stay in charge.
I have the solution for you. They pay him to go away. He takes over at Atletico Madrid where the job is vacated because El Cholo Simeone returns to Inter.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but Inter can pay him. So, hey, more changes. Fabio Paratici, the Juventus sporting director, he's no longer there either. Does that mean that Pirlo is going too? That the two that linked?
Inevitably, you're going to hear a lot about Zinedine Zidane returning to Juventus, about Max Allegri going there. Look, you know my views on this. The direction of travel was to a certain type of football.
Yeah.
Pirlo tried to play it. You can judge for yourself whether he's ready for it. If you replace Pirlo, don't replace him with Allegri or Zidane.
Replace
him with somebody. What?
What would be the point to have Allegri back with his own style of football?
Make no point. The other thing about Zidane, like being like, oh, he comes back. You know, it's been 20 years since Zidane was there. 20 years. Now, obviously, he has a bond with the club, but this idea that Zidane will materialize and he knows the club inside out. No, he knows a different club with different leadership in a different era.
It's not one of like, he's coming home.
No.
That would not really be right.
No. And I don't think he wants to get back into it straight away.
Yeah.
Milan have made it as explicit as they can. They're signing Mike Maignan from Lille and won't be making a new offer for Gigio Donnarumma after he turned down an $18 million season deal that would have kept him among the top five keepers in the world. Is this smart from Milan?
I think he's very smart, Gab. It's sad. I find it a sad story because Donnarumma is someone you say, okay, he could have been a Maldini and stayed the whole career at his club. This is where he started.
And made a ton of money since he was already making a ton of money.
Exactly. So I find that really disappointing, and I don't know how much Mino has to play with it, or Donnarumma, or the club. I don't even care. What I know is the fact is Donnarumma is going to go on a free, probably to Juventus or wherever he wants to go. And in Mike Maignan, they've got a really good, really, really solid goalkeeper who will improve, who's only 24, who they pay cheap, 30 million euros, who's not on huge wages either, and who will improve and keep improving. But he's really solid mentally. I mean, he's one of mine. He's Paris born and bred, so I can only be positive. But I really think this is a really good deal and a smart move from Milan in a context where they need to cut
I am tired of clubs being pushed around by people for stupid reasons. I'll tell you what, this could come back and bite Donnarumma. Because now other clubs know he has a club, so he's not going to get such a great deal. Mino's not going to get such a great deal.
No, I agree.
We've talked before about how Juventus is going to be problematic. They need to shift Szczesny. How cool would it be if he comes back and Mike Maignan goes back on loan at Lille for a season?
Oh my God.
Or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Champions League football.
Yeah. UEFA began official disciplinary proceedings against the rogue Super League clubs, Barcelona, Real Madrid and Juventus, that could result in them being banned from all European competitions. They respond with a statement saying that they will fight this in court and that if football doesn't modernize, it will suffer an inevitable decline. What do they mean, Gab?
They mean nonsense. I don't know how else to put it. Pre-pandemic, European football, which had made, as a whole, the whole system, which had made losses for 20-odd years, actually had two straight years of profits. Revenues doubled pre-pandemic. The reason they're in a tough spot is because they weren't equipped to deal with the pandemic. And they keep talking about modernization and Fortnite and blah, blah, blah. Now, that said, I have a tiny bit of sympathy for them because it's still not clear to me, because nobody will tell me straight up, and I think some people are lying, about that same deal that the other nine clubs took, the same plea bargain. Were they offered this, and did they say no to it? Because I think that changes things. If you weren't given the opportunity to come back, then you can see why they got nasty. They're gonna push this court case. They have the injunction from the court in Madrid. They say UEFA can't do it. I suppose some legal experts would say, we don't think UEFA has a case here to actually punish them by excluding them. We'll see how this unfolds. But for me, they're looking silly. And there's also still the possibility that this court case could ultimately result in them losing and then wasting more time and embarrassment. Not a good look. Mauricio Pochettino, according to The Athletic, is being linked with a return to Tottenham Hotspur. Apparently, he hasn't settled in Paris, which, of course, is where he lived before as a player many years ago. But hey, it's a different sort of place now. What do you make of this? Are you worried that Poch is going to leave you?
I wasn't, and then maybe I should be. PSG is saying this is all nonsense, he's staying here. We know that sometimes the relationship between him and Leonardo, the sporting director, haven't been the greatest. And of course, he signed an 18-month contract, so he's 6 months in it.
Could this be more a case of him saying, hey, how about you give me a real grown-up contract?
An extension, something. But he's been such a key part in keeping Neymar and extending his contract, convincing him to stay. Same with Mbappe. And why would you go back to Spurs now?
He'll take Mbappe with him to Spurs. Just kidding.
Bayern have announced a new signing, but an unlikely one in Omar Richard, the Reading defender, Gab.
He's got one England under 21 cap. I don't follow the championship. Our producer, Freddie, who's a big Reading fan, tells us that he's had a really, really good season. I think he's what you call a depth signing. He'll be joining his brother, Chris Richards.
Yeah.
Kidding, they're not really brothers. It's just the same last name. And their uncle, Dean Richards, and their grandfather, Viv Richards. Okay, let's stop there.
Denise Richards,
yes, their mom. He's a depth signing. He's a free transfer. I doubt he was making much money at Reading. Yeah. It makes sense.
Good for him, though. Great. I mean, great move.
Yeah, I imagine he's more of a defensive player than Alphonso Davies. So in certain situations, you can slot in there. They obviously also have Lucas Hernandez. I think he can play right back as well. And the reserve right back, as you know, is Bounassar. In fact, the starting lineup is Benjamin Puffer. Neither one much to write home about. Yeah, no disrespect.
True. That's true. That's true.
You know, why not? Good luck to him.
Yeah.
Gareth Southgate announces provisional England squad. Anything shock you, Jules?
Not really. 33 players. No Patrick Bamford, but Trent Alexander-Arnold is in. Certainly in that 33, then it would have to be reduced to 26.
I can't believe we even have a conversation about Trent Alexander-Arnold not going to the Euros.
I know, it's crazy. But hey, apart from that, it's okay. You know, I'm not a big fan of Gareth Southgate. Anyway, Spain also announced their squad. And then there's more to talk about, Gab, because Luis Enrique didn't call up Sergio Ramos and no Real Madrid player whatsoever. First time ever Spain going to a big competition with no Real Madrid player.
This is so weird. And not even, you didn't even call up Nacho, who can play 20 different positions. And
that's crazy.
But he did call up Emerick Laporte, who's not actually Spanish, and Eric Garcia.
He never plays.
I don't know. Yeah, he's going to Barcelona, so that makes him good. It seems very, very weird. A guy who's played so little, like Eric Garcia, why he would be in the squad ahead of a guy like Nacho.
Yeah,
Azpilicueta also going, which I thought was again, pretty odd because he's older. He's not having a great season. I know he's basically a defensive fullback, third central defender now at this stage of his career.
No Jesus Navas?
Jesus Navas, very attacking player.
I know.
No Iago Aspas either, yeah, if you really want to go there.
So strange. But, and 24 players. You can call 26. They've had an incredible season, so long and everything, yeah, and you still...
Hey, look, he's his own man. Feels, yeah, he doesn't need them, evidently.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Liverpool are inching closer to another central defender. It's your boy, Ibrahima Konate from Rasenballsport Leipzig.
It is, Gab, indeed. It's all sorted. It's not signed yet because they will have to wait until the end of the under 21 Euros where Konate is with France and pay the release close.
Well, because they can't physically sign the contract?
Because, well,
there's no DocuSign that.
No, but you would want him to be there. You just can't sign it on Zoom or something like that. It makes no sense. So, but medicals have been done. Everything has been agreed for the player, for between the two clubs. It's a release clause, so it's quite easy. 41 million euros. I think Liverpool were waiting to make sure they were in the Champions League next season to be able to pay, because release clauses you have to pay in one go. I think, personally, and again, I'm a bit biased, is one of mine, is Paris born and bred. I think it's a great signing. He's had a hip injury that sort of slowed, I think, a little bit his progress, but he's a wonderful talent, so strong, so quick, so good on the ball, improved a lot with Nagelsmann, so good luck to him.
But Liverpool are going to want to know, in terms of hip injury and stuff like that, like, he is fully recovered. Yeah, right? He's not going to go back into the Jogo, Matip, Van Dijk injury ward, right?
No, and he's had, I was told, like, really strong medicals that they wanted to check everything and stuff, okay, like that. And that means that Kabak is not going to stay. He's going to go back to Schalke. In last show, we forgot to say that Kabak was injured. That's why Rhys Williams had played a lot, which is true. We thought he came back into the squad, but he didn't. And I think Kabak did well at times. It's just that if you bring Konate in, plus Van Dijk, plus Matip, who's still on the contract until, like, 2023 or 24, plus Gomez, and Rhys Williams, and Nat Phillips, you don't need Kabak there. So, here we go. Sticking with Liverpool, Gini Wijnaldum is moving on. Gab, we both love him. And reports suggest that they are targeting Yuri Tielemans, who you absolutely love, your player of the season,
he was
to replace him. I mean, personally, I would love if that happened.
I don't see how this is going to work. I mean, he would be a phenomenal replacement, but I don't see how this is going to work, even with Leicester missing out. Tielemans has a contract.
It would be expensive.
What, yeah. 50, 60, 60, 70? 60. Even a year from now, it's only going to be even better. I don't see where Liverpool are going to get that money from. And,
I agree.
You know, the old chestnut, oh, they'll sell Mohamed Salah. No, you can't sell Mohamed Salah at this point, or Mane, or whatever. So I think it's a nice idea, Tielemans. Yeah. It would be a massive, massive shock for me if they scrape the money together to do it.
I agree.
We've all praised Lille's Christophe Galtier all season long, and now he's leaving.
I know.
Where's he going, Jules?
So three clubs contacted him. Napoli was the first one, which this one is not going to happen. And then the others.
Napoli are getting Luciano Spalletti. There you go. Why?
How?
That's what I wonder. Why are you signing Mr. Kurtz from Death of Dark, from Heart of Darkness? Why?
Incredible. But to go back to Galtier, so he's between Nice and Lyon. And you could say, hang on, really? Because Lyon, a much bigger club with a much bigger squad, of course, have to work with Juninho, who, as we will talk later, not always easy. We saw it with Rudy Garcia. Where was at Nice, he will work with Julien Fournier, who's sort of like the kind of sporting director, kind of CEO, who he knows really well. He's from the southeast, Galtier, so he's kind of going back home. And he feels there's a lot of potential at Nice with the owner, Ineos, the money that they've invested, a very talented young squad, but with some experience as well. And maybe he feels this is better than Lyon.
Can I ask a question? It's great that he's being linked with Nice and Lyon, and I say this with the utmost respect, but the Conte thing is new, but did Tottenham consider? Are they saying, like, oh no, after the great impact that Joao Sacramento Kings and whatever the other Muppet they brought along to help out Mourinho there?
I'm with you. I'm amazed.
They didn't even consider him, no?
I'm amazed. And he wants to come to England as well. I'm amazed.
He speaks English too.
Yeah. crazy, I think. Luka Modric signed a one-year extension with Real Madrid, as we expected, Gab. It's not a surprise, because Florentino told us it would happen anyway.
Right. Florentino always tells the truth and keeps his promises.
Never
so
lies.
There you go.
Never lies.
Yeah, look, I think you have to balance between a reboot, which Real Madrid obviously need because they got a lot of older players and it's going to be difficult because of the expenses. The reality, though, is Modric wants to be there. I would hope that he gave them a sort of hometown discount on his wages because he was on a big contract. If you can keep him around, help shepherd Fede Valverde and turn him into the next Modric or whatever, then fine. I'll be really curious to see what happens with Sergio Ramos because for me, that is the big one.
Because at least Modric gave you his best season. Never scored as much, never assist as much. He was really good for them. Mm. Sergio Ramos, however, is probably the opposite. One of his worst seasons at the club.
Poor man's been injured.
Yeah. But that's why,
Also, not quite a surprise, Hansi Flick will take over the German national team after the Euros. This just makes sense, yeah?
It makes sense completely. He'd been there before as an assistant. He did so well at Bayern. I think he wanted a different life when you were head coach manager. And, I mean, if you're German, being your national team head coach is pretty special, pretty amazing. So,
I think also he's getting stressed out. Bayern, Brazil, blah, blah, blah.
Sporting director.
Enough.
A trial against two police officers and a lawyer accused of covering up evidence after the Hillsborough disaster has collapsed, Gab. They weren't exactly found innocent, though, were they?
No, I mean, this is an awful story. Obviously, the Hillsborough disaster, Hillsborough tragedy we're all familiar with. These people were accused of essentially covering up and sort of giving misleading evidence to the Taylor report and subsequent public inquiries. Yeah. And effectively, they're let off on a technicality where the judge said, well, you're not in contempt of court because these weren't sort of criminal proceedings where you might have given false evidence to. This was just an inquiry, which is entirely different. To me, that's pretty weak.
It is.
And it's really, I would expect the judge to say, look, did you guys lie? Or did you lie?
Yeah.
You know, it's one or the other. It's up to you as a judge. Find out if this is what they've done. You don't need to throw these people. They're all old men now. You need to throw these people in jail. But I think the families, everybody's affected,
completely
deserve some closure and some clarity.
Completely.
Eintracht Frankfurt get their manager in the Bundesliga musical chairs game, which is worse even than the one in Serie A. It's Wolfsburg's Oliver Glasner. Guess he didn't really want Champions League football then, huh?
So strange. So he has a great season with Wolfsburg. They finish fourth. They're going to go into the Champions League. And yet he moves to Frankfurt to play in the Europa League. And yeah, I mean, why not? Three-year deal. There must have been something at Frankfurt that he really wanted. Maybe he feels they're a better club. I don't know.
It's a weird fit too because Adi Hütter played totally different brand of football than this guy.
Exactly. And it's not a cup of tea, but hey, good luck to him. Like all the others who are changing jobs. UEFA have turned down Andre Kudela's appeal and he will serve his 10-match ban, which means no Euros with Czech Republic for him. Gab, your thoughts?
So Andre Kudela, of course, the person who was found guilty of racially abusing Glenn Kamara of Rangers when they played in the Europa League. Look, in the end, when you had this and there's no impartial evidence, no tangible, no impartial witnesses, no tangible evidence, it comes down to who you believe. Do you believe Glenn Kamara? And unfortunately, it's the worst kind of pernicious abuse, right? When it's kind of whispered and only they know what happened. But I think once you've decided to believe Kamara and not Kudela, I don't know what new evidence he was going to submit in his appeal that's going to change your mind. It's necessarily going to be one of those balance of probabilities rather than beyond reasonable doubt. And it's good, I think, that they stand firm.
Definitely.
Reports in Germany talk of Edmund Tapsoba moving to Arsenal in exchange for William Saliba plus cash. Jules, you're smiling. Make sense?
I'm not smiling. I like Tapsoba a lot.
The greatest season, did he?
He was much better last year.
Oh, the best centre-back in the Bundesliga. And then this season, he stinks it up. He continues stinking it up even after Peter Bosco.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Saliba, who has had a really good season.
Nobody's actually seen, but yeah.
With Nice, deserves a chance. Deserve to at least get a look in by Arteta and his staff and see if he deserves a chance because he's back to his best level, the one that he had when they signed him from Saint-Etienne for 30 million euros.
So I'm not sure if that makes sense, Saliba and money for Tapsoba, because I really think that Saliba deserves a chance. He's got great potential, great future ahead of him.
It just seems, the whole thing, I think, I just find very odd. Because also, Tapsoba is going to cost you a bundle because,
you know, that's what I mean. They can't afford him.
So you can't afford him without
player plus why cash. But why would you do that?
Yeah, and who? And Saliba, I guess, was all Raul Sanjehi and those people, right? So
now
Edu and Arteta are like, oh, sorry, nothing to do with us.
But it's before Arteta, but it doesn't mean that it's because it's not an Arteta signing that he can't have a look and say, okay, show me now that you're ready, now that you're fully fit, now that you've played for 6 months, show me what you can
do. But Jules, Arsenal's central defenders are so good. Sol Campbell, but Tony lost, Adams, Martin Keown.
They've lost David Luiz, so I guess, technically.
I agree with you. I think it'd be a shame if you didn't get a look in.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic has been fined €50,000 and Milan €20,000 for his involvement in a betting company. Gab, that's not really smart.
It's not smart. He was a shareholder. It goes back to 2018. Yeah. Although, I'd love to have some actual clarity here in terms of the rules. We have clubs that are owned by betting companies here in England. I'm thinking of Stoke, for example.
Could be the only one, but still.
Sorry?
They're the only one, but still.
No, but you have other clubs that are owned literally by professional gamblers like Brighton and Brentford, right?
True.
So and then you've got clubs that take enormous amounts of money from betting companies as sponsor. Zlatan was obviously silly. Milan should have known about this. If they didn't, they're held responsible. The fines aren't that big. I don't know. I wish we'd have some very, very clear direction on this. For me, there's no reason why a footballer should be a shareholder until after he retires in a betting company. Sure. Equally, though, let's have clear rules. My man, Rudy Garcia, has left Lyon and he slammed the door behind him. What's going on, Jules?
It's amazing. You take the popcorn out and you just listen. So Rudy Garcia does an interview in L'Equipe saying Juninho, the sporting director at Lyon, scored a free kick in his own goal and he was doing stuff behind my back and all of that. Then Juninho respond on the club's channel saying, oh, Garcia is so insecure and loves himself so much and the sound of his own voice, but he's strong with the weak and weak with the strong. And it's just like, wow, I love it. Absolutely love it. In the end, Garcia was not good enough. I'm not sure if Juninho is good enough to be a sporting director in such a big club, but there's one who's still there, Juninho, and one who's left is Rudy Garcia.
By the way, for those who might be confused, when he means Juninho, he means Juninho Pernambucano, of course.
Yeah.
Phenomenal free kick taker, not the other Juninho, who was also very talented, who played for Middlesbrough and looked like a child.
True.
I think still looks like a child, like even today.
But there's one, just quickly to finish, story that I think sums it all up. In the January transfer window, Rudy Garcia was pushing to sign Kevin Gamero from Valencia, pushing really hard, saying to Juninho, we need him, we need him. Instead, they went for Slimani, but we need Gamero until Juninho realized that the agent of Kevin Gamero are also the agent of Rudy Garcia.
Yeah, I might also add Kevin Gamero, small, quick, nippy, kind of older striker, Islam Slimani,
the
big target man.
Like,
what do you want?
Yeah. On Friday, UEFA's competition committee will explore the possibility of away goals being scrapped in knockout competition. Gab, where do you stand? I'm all for it.
Yeah, I've come around to it. I would like people to look. You know my views. I with knockout competitions, you know, I've said this before, I'd go further. You know, we've got the group stages, and then let the highest seed decide if they want to play home or away first. And
yeah,
let
but
them
that's
decide
that's,
their opponent. That's what they should do.
Just talk about the away goals. Are you in or out?
The advantage of the away goals is that, in the end, you know what you have to do to win, right? So when you're on the pitch. So you know that if the away goals are going against you, you have to score another goal. And that motivates you. So I do think that there is a bit of a disincentive. But you can make it the away goals or you can make the home goals come double. It really makes no difference, right? But it does. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think there is a risk that without giving one side the advantage in the case of a draw, you might have a situation where teams end up saying, oh, yeah, let's go to penalties, like Villarreal last night.
Yeah, but you can make them, I don't know, count not for extra time. You can find a way, but you can't just go through because you did 1-1. The result was 1-1 away, and then you drew 0-0 at home, and you're happy, and you go through.
Yeah, and in fact, I think what we're also seeing is that a lot of teams are more comfortable. The whole assumption, again, this leads to the away goals, home and away. A lot of teams are more comfortable playing away from home.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the way they attack and whatever. So, I think it's good that they look at it and maybe update it a little bit.
Yeah.
But do it with data, do it with information, not just, ooh, I think that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You may have seen the video of foam insulation catching fire in the new roof of the Bernabeu.
Yeah.
Jules, it's not quite a metaphor, is it?
It's not. I mean,
nobody got hurt. They put it out.
No, nobody got hurt. It lasted just 5 minutes. Then it was extinguished, exactly. Thank you. And there was no damage done or anything like this. But still, when you see that cloud of smoke, it's still like, whoa, what's going on?
Do you think it was God expressing his disapproval?
Maybe it's the metaphor, metaphor, like you said, for the season. You know, I don't know. Going down in flames or whatever. Italian Inter legend Archisio Burgnesh has passed away, Gab. He was the king of old school, a warrior with a poet's heart.
Yeah, he won 2 European Cups playing for Helenio Herrera's Inter in the 60s. Yeah. And obviously in 1968, he won the Euros. He really was old school, rough and tumble defender. Never really dirty. Really, really hard, but never really dirty. And he was always really kind to me. He was there. I remember I spoke to him about Celtic winning the European Cup in 1967. He was on the other side, and he gave wonderful descriptions of that game. It was just always such a pleasure to talk to him. He later became a coach. He gave Roberto Mancini his debut, made Mancini a starter in 1981. When Mancini was just 16 years old, he started every game that season for Bologna. I mean, pretty amazing stuff. But my favorite thing is there's an iconic picture of Pelé, Ore Pelé, scoring in the Champions League final, World Cup final, yeah. 1970, scoring his header. The guy marking him is Burnić, who went up to challenge him. And Burnić, when asked about it, he said, you know, we both jumped as far as we could up into the sky. And then I came up to earth. Then I came down to earth where I belong, and he stayed up there where he belongs. Because if you see that, it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Serious hang time.
Lovely,
lovely
way to finish the show.
We got to come back on Monday to talk some Champions League final, right?
Who's going to win?
Ooh, I don't know. So join us then. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.